to another Brush Creek Folly Show. Swell times in store for all of you as we're celebrating the third anniversary of the show tonight of those two swell little gals, Kit and Kay. So hold your seats, pat your feet. Now here comes that genial, tubby pubby, roly poly master of ceremonies, radio's original Rube, Hiram Higsby. Come on!
Maybe I'm the Rube there. What you're hearing is just one of the more than 375,000 recordings housed at the Mar Sound Archives here at UMKC. It's one of this nation's most extensive depositories of musical and sound recordings. Chuck Haddix, the director of the archives, is here to talk about some of the most surprising recordings in the collection, and he's come up with some humdingers. Today we'll hear a newscast describing the 1951 floods in Kansas City, the Japanese surrender in World War II, and a young Walt Bodine introducing the Pete Eye Jazz Trio. Chuck Haddix is also host of the Fish Fry, heard here on Friday and Saturday evenings. And Chuck, always nice to have you here.
Good to be here with you, Steve, sharing these treasures from the sound archives.
No kidding.
Sometimes I feel like I'm a sound miser. You know, we have all this stuff in the collection.
And people don't know about it sometimes.
People they know about it, but they don't know about some of these specific gems that we've mined.
Tough to come up with a list today of things that, to unearth things people haven't heard.
It truly was, because some of these clips will be featured this weekend at a conference in Washington, D.C. For a project that was funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities, mm-hmm. and that's the preservation of the KMBC collection.
Mm.
You know, I've always loved radio, and now I have an opportunity to do some serious radio collecting. We have over 30,000 of these big 16-inch discs in the collection, and about 12,000 of them in catalog, so people find them. And these are, they capture moments in time, and some very profound moments, D-Day, Eisenhower talking to the Allies right before D-Day. Mm-hmm. Edward Murrow standing on a rooftop in London describing the bombing of London by the German troops, the German Air Force.
Right.
And really poignant things, just oral histories where people remember. We will hear some Aunt Molly Jackson in just a little while, where she talks about the miners' strike in 1930 in Kentucky. And a lot of rare jazz stuff, too, previously unknown recordings of Charlie Parker. And one of my favorites is a group called the Four Tons of Rhythm. And they recorded for the KC
label. Four Tons?
Yeah, they played at Martin's on the Plaza.
No kidding.
And it's surprising, because when you think about Kansas City jazz, you think about bebop and jam sessions. And they're kind of sound like the Mills Brothers, you know?
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. We're going to run through six recordings today. I'm guessing you could have come up with a list of 500, Chuck. We opened up with the Brush Creek Follies. Tell us about that.
The Brush Creek Follies was broadcast over KMBC from 1938 to 1952. This is from the Arthur B. Church KMBC collection. And it's, you know, at the same time that they were broadcasting, you know, this kind of country music and Rube stuff, they're also broadcasting Benny Moten from the Auditorium Ballroom. But Mr. Church looked around Kansas City and saw all this farmland out there. And so he developed shows specifically designed for rural audiences. And also there are a lot of people that migrated here had rural roots. And this was the second most popular program, Western program, behind the Barn Dance out of WLS out of Chicago. And the Nashville was going strong at this time, but they didn't have the reach that KMBC did. And so he cultivated it, and he copyrighted all of the characters, and they wrote scripts. And they had just joined the CBS network in 1928. Networks were a new thing then. They were the 16th member to join. And so they were expected to generate program for the network.
Hmm.
And so they developed programs like Life on the Red Horse Ranch, Phenomenon.
Yeah.
And, of course, you could pick up the Brush Creek Follies all over the Midwest.
So the Brush Creek Follies was the name of the program then.
That's correct. It was a variety program that showcased cowboy music. They had cowgirls like Kit and Kay. They had a group called the Texas Rangers that went on to star with Gene Autry in Western movies.
No kidding.
And
all local talent.
All local talent. And they toured regionally, too. They took it on the road during the week. And it was broadcast on Saturdays. Originally, it was broadcast from the Ivanhoe Temple. And then they moved to Memorial Hall. It became so popular, it was broadcast on Saturday afternoons. And then the Lyric Theater, where KMBC's studios were after they closed out the Pickwick Hotel, was designed to broadcast the Brush Creek Follies. And they were going to do television at that time. And they decided that the mechanical rights and all that was too expensive, so they backed off, and they kind of backed off on that idea.
And putting on these shows remotely back in those days, that must have been tough. It's tough today.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you think about it's a very fast-paced show, lots of corny jokes. People come up and play one tune and then get off the stage. And they had interesting characters like Bud and Spud. They allegedly met in jail. Mm-hmm. And we had a relative show up and confirm that they had met in jail, and Bud had been stealing chickens.
There you go. We're looking through the vast collection of the Mars Sound Archives here at UMKC with my buddy Chuck Haddix. And Chuck, this is pretty darn fun. Let's head out to the Red Horse Ranch. You hear this and you think a Prairie Home Companion. Tell us about the Red Horse Ranch, and then we'll hear some of it.
The Red Horse Ranch was a syndicated transcription program that was produced by KMBC for the CBS Network affiliates in 1935.
Transcription program meaning?
Well, they would manufacture these big six. See, in those days, they didn't have satellites and, you know, no internet, so they would distribute radio programs as big 16-inch discs that held 15 minutes on each side.
Wow.
And they were pressings, just like LPs, only they're 16-inch. They played 33 and a third. And they were series that were distributed, and the station would play it and then send it to the next station.
Huh.
And send it along, and they'd send out these records to the affiliates, and KMBC produced this. And this features Colorado Pete, who allegedly had the biggest gold tooth in Colorado. Alabama was one of the main characters, and the Texas Rangers also. And this story centers around a ranch owned by a guy named Sam Carter. And his daughter, Rose, is very desirable to all these cowboys. And it's kind of funny because it has drama, it has comedy, it has everything in it. And they'll be, you know, singing around the old bunkhouse. And then all of a sudden, one of them will ride up and say, you know, they're hustling our cattle. And they'll hop on their horses and ride up. It's kind of like a horse soap opera. But this was produced in 1935. I think we got 39 issues of this.
Wow. Well, this is from the Red Horse Ranch, and here's what it sounded like.
The boys at the Red Horse Ranch are still talking about what a great time they had at the barn dance. One subject of conversation is about a stranger by the name of Steve Bradford, who has just come into the country and bought the Bar D Ranch, which adjoins the Red Horse Ranch. And today, after a hard day's work, the boys are enjoying their favorite pastime, singing.
I drink whiskey, my money's my own, and them that don't like me can leave me alone. I'll eat when I'm hungry, I'll drink when I'm dry, and when I get thirsty, I'll lay down and cry. It's beefsteak when I'm hungry, and whiskey when I'm dry. It's greenbacks when I'm hard up, and heaven when I die. Rye whiskey, rye whiskey, rye whiskey, I cry. If I don't get rye whiskey, I surely will die.
Hey, Tenderfoot, keep a hold of that fiddle. We ain't through singing yet.
Well, if you don't mind, Bob, I think I'll hit the bunk early.
Oh, it ain't near dark yet. Oh, well. We don't have to get up till 4:30 in the morning.
4:30. Do we brand calves again tomorrow?
That's what Alabama said. Wrestling with them snorting yearlings ain't so easy, is it?
No, not for a mail-order cowboy like Tenderfoot, they ain't.
Hey,
you know, that's fairly sophisticated radio. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of moving parts with that.
It's radio theater.
Yeah,
is really what it is. You don't really hear that much these days on the radio, certainly not on commercial radio.
Prairie Home Companion comes sort of close, but
they're really inspired by this kind of radio. It's folksy, it's down home.
And fun.
It's funny, it's exciting, and we have a clip also of Life on the Red Horse Ranch that was part of a promotional film done in 1935, and it's funny because they're all working with one microphone. And they only have one microphone, and they step up to it, and you see Rose and Alabama,
wow.
And you know, I'm going back to the bunkhouse, and you know, it's fun radio, and it really is nice that this is captured. You know, there are a number of radio collections like this across the country, and we've banded together under the Radio Preservation Task Force at the Library of Congress, and they're documenting radio collections across the country. And so our new librarian that's working with us in the Sound Archive, Derek Long, and I have been, and Sandy Rodriguez, have been chronicling what we have in our collection, and it's amazing when you look at it, because I collect it, and then, you know, kind of goes on the shelf, it's cataloged, you know, and over, I've been doing this for 30 years, so we've developed quite a collection, so it's quite a task just documenting what we have.
Let's move on to something a little more somber, a little more serious, the KMBC's coverage of the 1951 flood here in Kansas City, Chuck.
Well, it's no exaggeration, because today it is bluff to bluff. I stand here, and on top of the bluffs on the Missouri side, the water is clear up to the bluffs on the Kansas side. There isn't a break except the tall buildings peering up out of the water, desolate, deserted, their basements filled, their first floors filled. What the loss is, I simply couldn't imagine. I can look over and see the stockyards. They're completely inundated. I know that out at the American Royal Building, which is just an island in the water out there, the hogs are up on the second and third floors of the hog house and moved them up there for safety. How many of the cattle they were able to get out, I don't know. Of course, fortunately, this being Friday, the receipts were very light, and the floods, of course, also had held down shipments for some days so that there weren't too many cattle in the yards. There were some that had been moved over from the feeding pens on the Kansas side of the river. They brought them over here for safety. That is, of course, not a very pleasant thing to talk about. Safety today, because there is no safety from flood unless you're on high ground.
That's Jim Burke from KMBC, one of the big tragedies in the history of this town. Again, pretty compelling radio, Chuck.
Oh, yeah, he's really telling the story and describing the scene, taking you right there.
And if, you know, again, you get a real sense. Those guys could really paint portraits back in those days.
Yeah, and it was a tag team effort. I think Burke did the best. And they also, there was a guy there, covered, another reporter, talking about the 1903 flood and what it was like and comparing it to the 1951 flood.
Yeah, just them describing how the water goes from Missouri, the edge of Missouri, all the way over to Kansas. You can begin to see that if you stood up on that bank and looked down at the bottoms at some point in your time here.
Yeah, you really get a feel for the scope and the power of the flood, too. They talk about all the debris that's being carried downriver. Oh, man, it's compelling.
Just incredible. I'm Steve Kraske, and we're back with Chuck Haddix of the Fish Fry, heard here on KCUR on Friday and Saturday evenings. He's also director of the Mars Sound Archives at UMKC, and we're spinning through some of the most surprising recordings from this absolutely incredible collection of music and spoken word. We're about to move to World War II, Chuck, and the signing of the Japanese surrender aboard the USS Missouri that ended the war. You have quite a collection of World War II stuff at the Mars Sound Archives.
Yeah, we have the most complete collection of the Armed Forces Radio Service discs outside of the Library of Congress. And also, during World War II, there was an engineer at KMBC that when he found out a bulletin was coming down or coverage of the war, he would record them on these big instantaneous cut, they're called instantaneous cut discs, they're cellulose acetate over a metal base, and they cut them with a cutting lathe. And he put those in metal containers and on a shelf in the basement of the KMBC. And they sat there for 50 years. And when we got the collection from them, I went downstairs and I felt like Indiana Jones, you know, in the Lost Temple. I opened it up and there were all these acetates and recordings of Harry Truman. Also, a lot of local political, Mayor Gage, James A. Reed. But the World War II stuff was really important, and it was just recorded from the CBS network. There's complete coverage of D-Day, for example. And it's just a wonderful collection. And one of my favorites that I just recently revisited, though, was Webley Edwards covering the signing of the Japanese surrender aboard the USS Missouri, ending World War II. This is a historic event, and he's a master at telling the story. And MacArthur's there, and also Admiral Nimitz. And, you know, and he's in that moment describing it for the world, really.
I mean, let's check it out.
3 years, 8 months, and 25 days since the attack on Pearl Harbor. We're 3,700 miles from there, but we have come much further than that by way of the Central Pacific, New Guinea, the Marianas, and the Philippines. The Japanese delegation has just arrived. Military men in formal military uniform and dignitaries, civilian dignitaries in formal attire. Lined up before us are more officers and men with high-ranking stars and gold braid than has been assembled in this bay for many a long time. The deck of the Missouri stretches out before us. We're on the veranda deck. Its great guns are pointed skyward to allow more room for the Army, Navy, Marines, and the representatives of the nations who are here. The United States, of China, the United Kingdom, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, Australia, Canada, France, Netherlands, and New Zealand. Planes have been flying overhead. The day is quite cloudy, a mist surrounding the mountains that come down to form the Tokyo Bay. Before us here are flags. Oh, here comes the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces, General of the Army, Douglas MacArthur, William Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz, and other dignitaries.
You know, Chuck, that's just great radio.
It truly is very compelling.
That is just breathtaking stuff.
You know, often when you'll see people listening to radio from the 30s and 40s, they're cocking their head and they're listening very closely. Of course, that was a shortwave broadcast, mm-hmm. and that's what leads up to one of MacArthur's most famous speeches. I found it really compelling, the telling the story and describing the scene. There you are in the bay in Japan, you know, and on board the USS Missouri.
Now, a whole different kind of recording. Aunt Molly Jackson telling how she wrote Hungry Ragged Blues. Tell us about Aunt Molly Jackson.
Aunt Molly Jackson was a union organizer. She lived in Clay, Kentucky, and her family were coal miners. Mm. Her husband and son and brother were all killed in coal mining accidents. Her father was blinded in a coal mining accident. And, you know, there was a bitter fight to unionize the miners. And she talks about Hungry Ragged Blues and how she wrote that song. She was also a songwriter. She wrote Pistol Packin' Mama, which was one of the big hits from World War II. And she was actually banned from Kentucky and went to New York and hooked up with all the communists and the intellectuals in New York. And she became a folk hero. But Hungry Ragged Blues, this is one of my favorite oral histories we have. She talks about how they didn't have any relief from the union, and they were on strike, and they're starving. And it was a communal kitchen there and a communal, you know, bread box, basically. And the little kids come, and they're starving. There's nothing to give them, and how sad she is. Mm. And she tells her son, she says, "You go fair with the rest. We're all the same here."
Let's listen to it.
It was about the middle. Well, it was the 16th morning. I remember it was the 16th morning of October in 1930. My sister's little girl, Flossie Doolin, she was going around to a soup kitchen where that we had emptied in the spring in April all of our canned stuff that we had canned up, and every bit of food we had, we had all thrown it together in order to make soup and try to save the lives of the children when the miners was blacklisted for joining the United Mine Workers of America. The coal operators had made a pledge with each other they'd never work another union man. So these children was going to this soup kitchen, and all the tops of their little feet was busted open from the cold wind, and you could track them by the blood running down between their toes, barefooted, and little thin cotton shirts on, and them all ragged and tore. So they waked me. And I went to the door. I asked my sister's little girl, "Flossie, what are you doing with these children out here in this cold rain and them naked and barefooted?" She said, "Aunt Molly, some of these children has not had a bite to eat since day before yesterday. I'm going to try to get them a warm bowl of soup at the soup kitchen."
That's Aunt Molly Jackson telling how she wrote Hungry Ragged Blues. We're down to one last recording that we're discussing this morning from the amazing collection over at the Mar Sound Archives. We're visiting with the collection's director, Chuck Haddix, also host of the Fish Fry, heard here at KCUR. And this last recording is of interest to a lot of us because we'll hear the voice of Walt Bodine, the longtime dean of Kansas City Broadcasters, who died in 2013. Chuck, I barely recognize his voice at first, and I bet our listeners won't recognize it either.
Oh, yeah. You know, we have the Walt Bodine collection at, at the Sound Archive, and we have his collection of bow ties, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's a special collection.
I did not know that.
This is from the Ed Roach collection, and Ed was a longtime engineer here in Kansas City. He had a recording studio in a church downtown. He was also the recording engineer for the Municipal Auditorium. And so between 1964 and 1972, he recorded the Kansas City Jazz Festival. And Kansas City Jazz Festival, it was a week-long celebration. You can actually, if you Google Kansas City Jazz Festival, you can look at the programs online. And but it was a week-long festival culminating with all big show down at the Municipal Auditorium. And Ed recorded all of these shows. And it's kind of funny because Lester Milgram of Milgram's grocery stores was a big supporter. And there's one segment where Lester introduces Wes McCann. Not Wes McCann, Les Montgomery. And he walks off stage and he doesn't shut his mic off and he talks throughout the performance.
Oh.
And Bernstein Appleby was also a supporter. This was a time when a lot of the civic leaders came together to support the jazz festival, and it was a big deal. And they always had personalities introducing the artists. And like there was a very popular jazz DJ named Dick Martin, and they call him Mungo with Martin. And he introduces Woody Herman. And John Bilyeu's there, and a lot of the old media cats are there too.
There's a lot more characters on the radio back in those days.
Oh, yeah. Radio announcers had personality back in those days.
Yeah.
Not obnoxious personalities.
Exactly.
And we have all of the tape on these programs from 1968, 1971. 1972 is when Pat Metheny made his debut on there. I'd love to hear that.
Oh, no kidding. But so what are you going to hear here from Walt Bodine introducing Pete I, sort of a mainstay of Kansas City jazz for many, many years? We're going to hear that, right?
Right, that's what we're going to hear. And it's kind of interesting because Walt gives him a little plug, and he's playing at the Baghdad.
Okay.
All these guys were playing at the Strawberry Patch and various venues they're forgotten now, but were big deals back in the days.
Okay.
Jean Glenn isn't aboard today. She'll be here at 9:30 because the woman wants the last word for once. And I'm happy to say I have the pleasure tonight of introducing the last word, I'd say, in the trio hereabouts, the Pete I Trio. Pete I Trio normally can be heard over at the Baghdad Lounge on Broadway. And also they've made a number of appearances here in the city in concerts as they're doing this very moment, you might say. Now, the members of the Pete I Trio, reading from whichever direction to whichever other direction, are Don Winsell on bass, Vince Bilardo on drums, and Pete I himself from the trio of the same name playing the piano. Thank you.
That is great jazz.
Oh, yeah.
That's really good stuff.
Oh, man, he was so great for long-time fixture on the scene, man.
And the other thing you just threw at me here is the names of the people playing at this particular jazz festival back in 1964. And for those who are into jazz like I am, the names here, you just can't believe who was here. Jay McShann, for one thing. Woody Herman is the big headliner. Pete I, who we're listening to right now. Carmel Jones, the great trumpeter from Kansas City. And so many others. It's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. This was a big deal, and they would celebrate all week long, and they would play in unusual venues like department stores. They'd have a concert in department stores, and all the clubs featured jazz too, and it would be Jazz Week.
Wow.
I mean, and it's amazing. This is truly a lost and found artifact because, you know, we've got the Ed Roach collection of these instantaneous cut discs, and it were given by his daughter and also his tapes. And one day it was starting to snow terribly. It was like a Friday, and they were going to close the library at 3:30, and this young man shows up, and he said, "I'm Ed Roach's grandson. And I said, "Yeah, great. You know, well, here's the Ed Roach collection. We had a picture of him. If you don't do right by a collection and somebody, you know, relative stops by and you say it's in a corner over there, you're in trouble." Mm-hmm. We had done the right thing with it. He said, "I've got something for you." And I went out, and he had all the tapes in his car, and he gave us all these jazz festival tapes.
Yeah. Again, this is just great stuff, too.
Yeah, Carolyn Brewer has written quite a bit on this. And the Kansas City Kicks Band is funny because I was talking to somebody, Bob Cowan out of Leavenworth, and the Kansas City Kicks Band still lives. And it's just... And the quality's really outstanding, too.
Also playing in 1964, Marilyn May, who's obviously still around, just played the Prairie Village Jazz Festival a couple weeks back. Eddie Cleanhead Vinson playing with the Frank Smith Trio. Again, world-class musicians right here in Kansas City.
Yeah, notice Marilyn May is playing with Sammy Tucker, her husband.
Yeah, is that who
Tucker.
That is?
Yeah. They were probably down at the Colony at that point. There were a number of venues in Kansas City that have been kind of forgotten, and the Colony was one of them. You know, Julie Turner played the Colony, too. So,
well, this is really fun. Clark Terry in town just died a year or so ago, one of the great players with Duke Ellington and Count Basie for so many years
And also Bob Brookmeyer.
Mm-hmm. Bob Brookmeyer, yeah.
And we recently received one of Bob's first recordings, and it was a Kyrie he composed for the Conservatory of Music's graduation in 1949, performed by the Conservatory Orchestra and Choir. And it came from Don and Mary Warner as part of a collection they gave us.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's very exciting. It's like Christmas every day working in the sound archive.
A good way to put it. It's always Christmas when you're in the studio with me here. Chuck Haddix of the Fish Fry, the Mars Sound Archives. Chuck, thanks so much.
Thank you.